We get this going, let me introduce to you Catherine Hobgood Ray. This is Catherine's first ARSC convention. She lives here in New Orleans. She works as the Assistant Director of Public Relations and Web Communications at Tulane University. She's also a graduate student, a musician, a songwriter, a roller girl, and a new victim of the record research bug. Catherine is finalizing her master's thesis on guitarist Snoozer Quinn. Now, why Snoozer Quinn? Well, that was her great uncle. And she's going to talk about Snoozer today. And if this piques your interest and your curiosity, you can follow her research at snoozerquinn.com. They give URLs to anybody today. In a second, she'll be ready to go. And please welcome her to her first ARSC conference, as I said, Catherine Hobgood Ray.
Thanks, everybody. While this loads up to Mac, we had to switch it out. I just wanted to tell you that today I have a very limited time, 20 minutes. I've given this presentation just once before, maybe twice before, and usually I really delve into Snoozer's biography. He was from Bogalusa, Louisiana, which is north of New Orleans, and I think that really influenced his musicality. But I really want to take advantage of the fact that this is an audience of sound collectors, and I hope to tap into the knowledge base that's in this room to help me further my quest. So I'm going to give you an overview of his career, and at the end I'm going to present to you a couple of mysteries that you guys can advise on. And I'll get this pulled up in just a second. Okay, let me get to the top. All right. So, for the uninitiated who've never heard of Snoozer, here are just a few quotes about him from other musicians. Jimmy Davis, who, as you know, was a hillbilly singer, but also the governor of Louisiana, he was interviewed by the Country Music Foundation in Nashville, and he had this to say about Snoozer. "The last time I saw Snoozer, he was walking down the streets of Baton Rouge playing the Tiger Rat. He had the guitar on his back playing it behind him." Well, I don't know if that's true. Frankie Trumbauer. In October 1928, he met Snoozer. The Paul Whiteman Orchestra came to New Orleans to give some shows at the St. Charles Theater. It was a matinee performance and an evening performance. And in between shows, musicians hung out and, I guess, had dinner and a little some good times together, and that's where he met Snoozer. So Frankie Trumbauer wrote in his diary or journal that night, "Tonight I met Quinn, the only boy who has it on Eddie Lang, I believe." Danny Barker, New Orleans' own, was interviewed by Southern Living magazine in the 1960s. He was asked to put together his dream band of all-star New Orleans musicians, and he includes Snoozer along with a lineup featuring King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, and Jelly Roll Morton, and others. He says, "Snoozer is my guitar and is the best of all time." And last one. Les Paul was informed about Snoozer in the 1940s. He was friends with Paul Whiteman, and Paul Whiteman told him about this great guitarist who he just couldn't get to leave his home. So Les Paul had a gig here in Louisiana. He took the time to drive to Bogalusa, which is about an hour north in the country in the middle of nowhere, and he found Snoozer. "I visited Snoozer at his house. He played a couple of records for me. And then he played for me out on the front porch. That's where I learned to pull and hammer strings. which is a really, really nice endorsement. In his lifetime, Snoozer actively played with some of jazz greats, including Louis Armstrong, the Dorsey Brothers, and, of course, the Paul Whiteman Orchestra. He was born in 1907, and his peak performing years were about 1925 through 1932, mostly with Southwest Territory bands like the St. Louis Rhythm Kings, Peck's Bad Boys, Louisiana Ramblers, and the Mark Britt Orchestra. In Texas, he was called the Banjo King. That was his role. He was based out of Houston for a while, and he was known on the radio as the Banjo King. That was about 1927, 28, but he was already playing guitar in that time. One of those bands is the Mark Britt Orchestra. And this is a really great picture. Mark Britt is here at the front. I'm going to come back to this picture at the end of the slideshow. It's one of those mysteries I was talking to you about. But Snoozer is the third from the right. He has a little pointy head. As an aside, something interesting about Snoozer was he was born with a misshapen head. He had one eye when he was born, so he had a glass eye his whole life. And I think that might have contributed to some of his shyness and some of his avoiding the limelight. So this band was labeled by Victor Records as a hillbilly band when they recorded in 1928. Snoozer's not included in the lineup by Brian Rust. That's one of the questions I have. I'm not sure why he isn't, because my research indicates he would have been with the band during this time. But these bands were playing what was called hillbilly, but I think today we'd certainly call it jazz. So Snoozer never did embrace the big time. His big chance came from that meeting in October 1928, apparently backstage after Trumbauer and Big Spider Beck and some other guys from the band introduced him to Paul Whiteman. Paul hired him on the spot. And so in December 1928, Snoozer went to New York City, but he was only there for about 3 months before he decided to come back home. So I think that's pretty much one of the reasons why he's largely unknown today. He didn't have too many opportunities beyond that trip to New York City. He mostly played with Southwest Territory bands, came back home, played with a couple of small bands like Robert E. Lee's Confederates, he ran his own band out of Bogalusa for many more years, but he was pretty much in and out of the hospital for the rest of his life. He suffered from tuberculosis, and ultimately that's how he died. Snoozer is my great-great-uncle, and I've been chasing his ghost for a few years, building his biography through interviews with family members, very few remaining musicians who were alive when he was. I did get the chance to interview Les Paul briefly. There's a musician named Frank Federico, who is Louis Prima's guitarist, who's in a nursing home in New Orleans. I interviewed him. And also the wonderful oral histories at the Hogan Jazz Archive at Tulane. They've been wonderful in building out his biography and just creating a very colorful picture of this man. And also a lot of newspaper research. That's how I'm building a kind of a chronology of events. Also, I'm trying to figure out, by listening, how Snoozer differed in technique from his peers, who I would call Lonnie Johnson and Eddie Lang. And I would like to know, what were the techniques that Snoozer brought to the development of jazz guitar, the guitar as a solo instrument in jazz? This is a family tree created by Maurice Summerfield for his book Jazz Guitar, Its Evolution and Its Players. And it's kind of fuzzy, but perhaps you can see at the very top, right here beneath Lead Belly and Big Bill Brunzy, Lonnie Johnson and Snoozer Quinn are, we'll ignore Django and Oscar, who came out of nowhere. But these guys are these American guitarists. So you have, on the far left, you have the New Orleans guitarist who played banjo as well, and it was that very rhythmic type of guitar as opposed to the lead guitar technique. And so I'm trying to figure out how Snoozer played differently from Eddie Lang and Lonnie Johnson, both who recorded a lot more in their lifetime. Eddie, of course, was Italian. He was schooled classically in the European musical tradition, and he was from Philly. He was playing mazurkas and polkas in his youth. And Lonnie Johnson was a black from New Orleans. He was steeped in the sounds of New Orleans, black urban blues, and parade bands at the turn of the century. So what did Snoozer have that was different from these guys? What did he bring? What did he bring that was unique from Bogalusa? So my main challenge, of course, is coming up with examples for listening. He did record professionally. He recorded solo sides featuring banjo and guitar for Victor Records in May 1928, but they're rejected. So that's a really big bummer, but I'm sure all of you can understand. He also recorded with hillbilly singer Jimmy Davis in 1931. And there are interesting recordings. You can hear the guitar very clearly behind Jimmy singing, but they really don't offer too much insight into his jazz technique. And in recordings that he made with the Paul Whiteman Orchestra, he's either buried beneath the string sections, or really it's debatable that he's with the Whiteman Orchestra at all. In fact, I think some of my research has, though not published yet, will probably prove that he came back to Louisiana a lot earlier than people sometimes give him credit for doing. He came back March 6, 1929, and he often gets credit all the way through April, May, June, sometimes as late as November. So I don't think, unfortunately, we can listen to a lot of Paul Whiteman to hear what Snoozer was like. But what we do have, thankfully, are recordings made of him by Johnny Wiggs in 1948. Snoozer was on his deathbed. This was recorded in the tuberculosis ward at a New Orleans hospital. But they do give us some sense of his wonderful musicality and style. Johnny Wiggs recorded him. He took this real machine into the nurse's ward, and I think there was a lot of noise going on, a lot of distractions, but I'm just so thankful that he did this. So what he did was he released four of the songs of 78s on his own label, and then in 1969, the full session that I know of was released by Fat Cat Jazz on an LP out of Manassas, Virginia. I'm going to grab that really quick. So this is what was released. And I do have the 78s as well. I just didn't bring them today. This is hard to find, but they are out there. So You Took Advantage of Me is one of the prime examples of Snoozer's unique style. I'm going to play this, and what I'd like for you to listen for are his ability to maintain a four-beat rhythm using chords. So he's maintaining the bass part all at once while he's simultaneously playing melodic lead and his own harmonic accompaniment. Thank you. dissecting his music, and I'm listening. And one of the things that I've also discovered that he was really innovative for was, in his time, he's playing this L6 guitar, which has really you were able to project very loud, and that's what kind of made it a favorite instrument for these orchestras, these big orchestras, because you could finally hear the guitar, and that instrument was what helped pave the way for guitars as a solo instrument. But Snoozer was very innovative, and he brought, he was probably 10 years ahead of George Van Epps for playing fingerstyle, in that he didn't use a pick, which was very unusual and different from Eddie Lang and Lonnie Johnson. And I'm going to play a short clip of Lover Come Back to Me, because it also demonstrates an interesting technique Snoozer had, palm harmonics. He is playing, as I've been able to deconstruct this with a local guitarist named John Rinkin, he is playing his guitar and then will use the palm of his thumb to make the harmonic ring out. Tell you now about the silent film footage that we found, which is very, very exciting. I think that the sound footage, this film footage, it wasn't that it was lost, it was just forgotten, and it was sitting in the vaults of the Louisiana State Museum and had been since they received a donation from the Jazz Museum in the 1970s, I believe, and they have the head of collections at the Louisiana State Museum, Greg Lambusi, will tell you, it was the single largest donation they've ever received, and they still, to this day, don't know what's in it. And I just happened to know about this film to look for it, based on very, very obscure reference to it. And we found it in a refrigerator. And so we got a grant to digitize it, and what it turns out that, let me see if I can find the little. I need to drag this. The granting agency. I hope no members in here, because I'm going to skip past the logo. I basically, it's like a minute of logo. So this film was filmed in 1932, and we know that because the outfit. I tracked down the person who filmed it's family member. His name was Charles Peterson. Some of you may know him as jazz guitarist or banjoist. He was playing with Rudy Valley's Connecticut Yankees. But also, he later became a jazz photographer in the late 1930s. And Snoozer was at his house in 1932, and this was recorded on their back porch. We've been able to definitively date the film because we also have a still from that day where Charles's son, Don, as a toddler, is in a crib and Snoozer's playing with him. So you have, it was great to be able to get this footage, know that it's Snoozer playing in his prime, and know that as early as 1932, he's playing without a pick and also utilizing some of these things they call hammer-ons and pull-offs that Les Paul mentioned earlier. The film has been slightly slowed down. It was, you'll see, it speeds up in parts, it slows down in some, but it's just wonderful to see the man in doing his thing. Thank you. He was known for being able to play Tiger Rag one-handed. He had this trick of being able to play all the parts and shake your hand while doing so, and that's why he got the gig with Paul Whiteman, apparently. I sure wish that we had Tiger Rag to listen to. That was one of the sides he recorded. But this footage is only about a minute and a half long, and at the very end, you'll see him do one of those really amazing rapid hammer-on pull-off trill passages, which I think is what allowed him to actually take his hand away from the guitar and get sound out of it. He was able to actually play the melodic notes. His fingers were so strong on his left hand that he could make sound come out of the guitar with that hand alone.
This is purpose.
Really? You can tell that. That's good. That's great. I'm glad you can help me advise me on some of this stuff. I can tell you what kind of camera it was. I have that information. Yes. I am working with, I would consider him one of the foremost guitarists in the country, John Stropes. He runs the Fingerstyle Program at University of Wisconsin. And he and his class are, he's using this as a class project to break down. It's going to be a really cool thing when we get the results. Okay. I am going to just finish up with telling you a little bit about my unanswered questions. I know that I've had some email exchanges with people in this room who tell me give up on the Victor recordings. They're lost. They've been searched for. But I think they're probably, you know, if they were released as artist pressings, you know, I think they likely could be around Bogalusa or New Orleans. And I found a newspaper article that makes me think so, saying that there was actually a record release party at Orleans. And this would have happened, you know, November 1928, as this says. I follow the trail of the newspaper articles from the time he started recording, which is around March 1928 through now. They're waiting for release, and then finally this article comes out. But there really wasn't much hullabaloo about it, so I realized this is a small-town paper, and a lot of hearsay gets published in small-town papers. But I did find this really a reason to always hold that hope up there. Also, something interesting to Bix fans, Snoozer had this newspaper article kind of bolsters an account that Snoozer told his friend Johnny Wiggs that he had remembered recording some solo sides while he was up in New York. He did some, on each side, he did a humming chorus, but he just doesn't remember any of the titles beyond Singing the Blues, and he only remembers that Bix and Trumbauer were among the musicians who took part. This would have happened, I'm imagining, sometime as a between his arrival of December 6th and, based on U.S. Postal Service, maybe December 16th, 1928. If that did happen, that's pretty interesting. And then the last thing I want to put forward to you guys is this matter of the Mart Britt picture. This, I'm assuming, is a publicity shot for promoting the record. And newspapers also lead me to believe that Snoozer was with the Mart Britt Band through September 1928, and Goose Creek Stomp, I have the records there for you to look to. Goose Creek Stomp and Sadness Will Be Gladness are two songs that I particularly am wondering if Snoozer is on. And based on how I am visualizing recording was done at the Peabody Hotel, the lead singer wouldn't have been able, Mart Britt did play banjo. That's one of the reasons that he gets credit by Rust for being the banjoist on these recordings. But as I envision how a recording would take place, the banjo is such a loud instrument that you'd have to have it in with the rest of the band, and the vocalist wouldn't be able to do it simultaneously because his instrument would overpower his vocal part. That's just a theory on my part. Based on that and then the timing of this recording, I feel like it's possible Snoozer could have been with them. But I will continue my research into that. So I will conclude by saying please do follow my research at my website, snoozerquinn.com, and hopefully my thesis will be wrapped up very soon. It's in the draft phase, and I'm always researching and keep going. So thank you. Question. Dizzy head. They are. And you're absolutely right. And I do utilize those records as I'm writing my musical thesis and my thesis. I think it's very important to show that he had this country in blues. And they sound very good. Yes.
Have you had access to the big cassette machine?
No, I have not, and I understand that it is possible to get access to them. I would love advice on how to do such a thing. By the Quinn family, I was given his violin, which I treasure, and they have another guitar. It's an L-O-O Gibson. It's much smaller, and it's one that I don't know what happened to L-6 through the years. Right. Well, at times he did, yeah, for that session, there actually are two tracks that you can tell he plugged. No, he wasn't playing electric in his prime. Definitely on Lover Come Back to Me. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, that was recorded in 1948. Yeah, definitely. And he liked to play with toys, you know. He didn't shun electric. Yeah. Yes. Oh, he was so good that he could play in his sleep. He was given the nickname by Pet Kelly, who was a pianist from Houston, Texas. So, yeah, that's why he had the nickname Snoozer. The one eye thing might have contributed. Yeah. Any more questions? Thank you all very much. I look forward to talking to you one-on-one.